Welcome to the Agency of the Month, Navy, sponsored by HP Enterprise. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
Rear Admiral Matt Winter, the Chief of Naval Research, is packing up knickknacks. This week is Winter's final one on the job. He's leaving the post on Friday to take a leadership position in the Pentagon's F-35 program office. Before departing, he spent a few minutes with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu to talk about his 2 years as leader of the Office of Naval Research, which, by the way, turned 70 years old this year.
Congratulations again, first, on your new assignment. And I do want to talk about your last couple years as chief as we go along. But, you know, first, given that this is the 70th anniversary of ONR, I want to give you a chance to kind of brag on your office's history a little bit. Talk with us a bit about what you think are some of the most consequential achievements / contributions since this office first stood up.
Sure, Jared. Thank you very much. And as the 25th Chief of Naval Research, I'm honored and humbled to be the steward of this leadership position when we do celebrate this 70th anniversary. Starting back on 1 August 1946, when President Truman signed us into law, we've had a phenomenal string of technical, scientific, and transitional technology accomplishments. Things like radar and sonar, nuclear propulsion, the underpinnings of those that have found their way not only into military applications, but into our civilian and corporate and quality of life for all Americans. We are very proud of the 63 Nobel Prize laureates that have ONR on their name from research efforts that have then again supported the Office of Naval Research Science and Technology Strategies. From a specific technology efforts, over these last 70 years, the Office of Naval Research has been the leader in intelligent systems research. We were the first with a fully digital computer, the Whirlwind, early experiments in our robotics work. And now as we move forward into the number of autonomous vehicles in the air, on the sea, and under the sea, all that coming out of the algorithmic phenomenology of the Office of Naval Research. Other areas like electric and directed energy systems, things that people are aware of with our electromagnetic railgun, really taking shipboard gunnery to the next level, an incredible capability with the advanced materials and the electromagnetic research done by the Office of Naval Research. Laser weapons, laser cannons, things that seem to be the future are here today based upon some of our incredible scientists' work in material science that shows how we can actually compact energy density in very small form factors that allow us to have reasonable integration successes for laser capabilities on our ships and eventually on our aircraft. One that I wouldn't want to leave out is precise timing. The ONR investments to basic research on cooling of atoms and then being able to actually measure the movement of cooled atoms led to the atomic clock. The Naval Observatory atomic clock came out of the Office of Naval Research and Naval Research Laboratory, which has then led to a number of other advancements, such as GPS, which is arguably everywhere in the world these days.
And Admiral, you talked a second ago about how much of that history has lent itself to technologies that wound up having kind of world-changing implications for the civilian world. And people talk a lot nowadays about how, you know, DoD is no longer in the leadership position it used to be in terms of developing innovative new technologies. And I wonder what you think about that. Is an office like ONR positioned nowadays to come up with these, you know, game-changing civilian sector ideas like GPS, like, you know, leap-ahead advances in computing?
Well, Jared, the short answer to that is yes. There's no lack of the number of breakthrough technologies that the Office of Naval Research transitions annually. In fact, we transition a little over 200 technologies out of our S&T bins, as we call it, directly to our sailors and Marines if they're ready, to our industry / programmatic technical baseline teams to assist in those projects like submarines and surface ships and aircraft that are being developed, as well as transition to private industry for their licensing. We generate almost 400 technical patents annually out of the Office of Naval Research and the Department of the Navy that then are available for licensing by those that are interested. So I see inside the fence lines of the Department of the Navy, and arguably when I look in our U.S. Army and Air Force, DARPA, and other Department of Defense Science and Technology organizations, an incredible wealth of innovative thinking, solutions-based generation, and the technologies that come out. Arguably, most of those are in the, the algorithmic phenomenology, the software domain, making projects, or excuse me, the capabilities you currently have better and more robust. So it may not be visible to the human eye, but I'm here to tell you that the Department of Defense is very innovative and has an incredible amount of science and technology moving forward.
And to stick with the modern era, CSIS had a pretty sobering report a couple months ago on just the state of research funding in DOD. They found it's taken a really disproportionate hit to everything else in the current defense drawdown. I think the number was down 53% in at least contracted dollars since 2009. In that environment, how do you prioritize? You know, what are the things that you've tried to protect, whether you want to bin that by basic vice applied research or specific S&T focus areas within ONR?
That's a great question, Jared. So, you know, from a business optic, one would say that your science and technologists, you know, O&R for the Department of Navy, but collectively across the department, we're really the venture capitalists for the Secretary of Defense, for our Secretary of the Navy, and so forth. The budgets have come down at the top line for the Department of Defense, but our S&T budgets have remained relatively constant over the last two decades. Not at the same levels that I would like to see, but I understand the pressures facing the financial realities across the department for current operations and modernization. So the resources that we do get, which is measured about 1 to 1.5% of the top line to maintain that relevant and dominant capabilities into the future and keep us, you know, competitive in the market space, in this case, Department of Defense market space. So how do we do that, and how do we continue to move forward and prioritize that? The Department of the Navy has an S&T strategy that is well thought out. It's coordinated with industry and academia. It brings together a focus on best and brightest partnerships and performers so that we can get the work done and get the biggest bang for the individual S&T dollar. I am a big advocate for continued focus on basic research. That basic research that generates the new ideas, the innovative discoveries, the knowledge that only God knew yesterday that we now know today is truly that corpus of knowledge that allows the engineers and other scientists to look at applications to bring forward. And without that basic research, someday you will have a cavitated pump and have nothing to draw upon for application and advanced research. So we prioritize about half of our resources in the Department of the Navy in the S&T world on that basic research and finding that best and brightest cadre of scientists and technicians here and around the world to give us that corpus of knowledge so that we can then extract the highest payoff, highest risk, things like railgun, things like laser cannons, things like LDU UV, our undersea unmanned vehicles that then can give the biggest bang and payoff for our sailors and Marines.
And I've heard you talk before about the importance of having shovel-ready S&T projects. Are there obvious focus areas where you would spend that next research dollar if suddenly an influx of money came in?
Absolutely. In fact, I think that's an attribute for all of us to have, regardless of where you are, what you do. You could be a school teacher in a middle school. You could be a scientist in the Department of the Navy. It's important to have a shovel-ready list of activities and things that you could do in the event that a windfall of resources shows up at your door. In our case, we have prioritized S&T focus areas that I've identified based upon our Chief of Naval Operations and Commandant of the Marine Corps' priorities. And those fall into cyber, directed energy, synthetic biology, electromagnetic maneuver warfare, and autonomous intelligent unmanned systems. And within each of those, Jared, we have a number of, I call them shovel-ready, but they're executable-ready, basic, applied, and advanced research that includes experimentation and demonstration that in the event that we have an performing project that actually generates an asset, or we do get an asset from outside, we are ready to step off and utilize those resources expeditiously to get the outcomes we're looking for.
Rear Admiral Matt Winter, the departing Chief of Naval Research, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. I'm Tom Temin.
Government organizations have always sought to serve our nation's citizens, but the rapid evolution of technology and sophistication of cyber threats have made this mission more complex. HPE has the people, the capabilities, and experience to deliver IT solutions to the right place at the right time, securely. HPE Enterprise Services is proud to partner with governments to transform their IT to better support the millions of citizens who rely on them every day. To learn how HPE can help you, visit hpe.com. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, accelerating next.
Rear Admiral Matt Winter, the departing Chief of Naval Research, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu.
Another one of the things I've heard you talk about during your time as chief is sort of the business of science and building what you've called an inclusive and dynamic space for research. Can you talk a bit more about what you mean by that? What do we mean when we say inclusive?
Absolutely, Jared. So to understand business of science, you need to understand the science of science. And I have broken those two nomenclatures apart to give better focus on science of science, which is the things I've just talked about earlier with radar and sonar and advanced intelligent systems. We just had a patented process that an NRL scientist took live tissue and can 3D print an artery, a vein, and a capillary. Those types of science are going to continue to move forward. But if they hit the belt sander of the business of science in not the right money, not the right contract vehicle, a legal precedence or policy that slows things down, then that science of science, as good as it is, will not find its way to either the marketplace with our industry partners or to our sailors and marine, more importantly, to ensure they have the technological advantage on the battlefield. So we've put a focus on that business of science, on that contracting and grant awarding, reducing the time tax it takes to go from a great idea to get it on contract, to get resources to the performer to actually bend the metal, write the code, and deliver that technology. And we've had quite a good amount of success of reducing the time in the S&T domain to get those projects on contract when we need to use our industry partners, and to be able to get the money to our research laboratories within the Department of Navy to get that moving faster. So the business of science is absolutely key. It's the enabler to ensuring the science of science is realized.
And there's a lot of talk lately about building a faster, more agile acquisition system for DoD. And I think you've already got a lot of that within ONR. Can you talk a little bit about how the processes that you have available are different, more agile than what people would think of as the traditional resourcing and acquisition and contract writing process?
Sure. I'll go on record to say that I believe the DoD 5000 provides a good framework that allows a thoroughness and understanding that the taxpayer dollar that is invested brings us the appropriate capabilities that our warfighter is requesting. However, the speed of that execution has a number of barriers. And the biggest one is, I call it a time tax, Jared. From the time that somebody comes up with a good idea or comes up with a requirement that we know we want to pursue, we have an inordinate amount of go and no-go processes and authorities that we need to navigate through to get to what I call the yes, which allows us to just start the work. It's imperative that all leaders look at those processes in their own command and try to eliminate or minimize the time tax to getting to yes. And within the Office of Naval Research, our forefathers were very visionary in collecting the appropriate authorities under a single commander and within the S&T domain granted. So that's 616263, we call it. That's basic, applied, and advanced research. Those authorities include head of contracting, resource management, legal authorities, and the ability to start and stop projects within those basic, advanced, and applied research domains. By providing that to a single commander that has the authority, but also the accountability to show the relevance and the outcomes, we've been able to increase the number of projects with the same amount of dollars, increase our partners partnerships with our industry and academia performers that do that work with us so that we can truly increase the outcomes to, like I mentioned earlier, a little over 200 technologies coming out the door. So when we look at that as a model for increasing the delivery of capability to your customer, you could call it the warfighter in this case, but I also deliver technologies to programs of record, to industry, to academia. It's the essence of collecting those authorities under a single commander that allows the time tax to be minimized. I truly believe that we can replicate that in certain other areas, not just the government, but across industry and academia, to reduce those time taxes and get things out the door faster.
Rear Admiral Matt Winter, the departing Chief of Naval Research, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. I'm Tom Temin.
Government organizations have always sought to serve our nation's citizens, but the rapid evolution of technology and sophistication of cyber threats have made this mission more complex. HPE has the people, the capabilities, and experience to deliver IT solutions to the right place at the right time, securely. HPE Enterprise Services is proud to partner with governments to transform their IT to better support the millions of citizens who rely on them every day. To learn how HPE can help you, visit hpe.com. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, accelerating next.
Federal agencies have been placing a high premium on innovation. Ideas might be plentiful, but turning them into effective programs, well, that can be a big challenge. The Chief of Naval Research, Rear Admiral Matt Winter, can attest to the difficulty of making sure projects stay on track. He tells Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu how he ensures the Office of Naval Research stays in sync with other Navy and DoD offices to make sure they're not all fixing the same problem.
So it starts with a responsibility of organizations like the Office of Naval Research and the leadership, to include myself, to be proactive in awareness campaigns. That means people need to know, organizations need to be aware of the capabilities, the projects ongoing, the capabilities that are on the shelf, so that when we start new projects, we're not duplicating either innocently or knowingly where we've already accomplished something. What keeps me up at night is inefficiencies. When we know that we've already spent a dollar and we've got a technology on a shelf and we start off on a project to do that same technology just because we weren't aware of it on the shelf, that's a failure on our part. So ONR has been in a campaign of awareness over these last 2 years, arguably for our whole 70 years, but we've literally put our shoulder into this. To our sister services in the Army and the Air Force, to our OSD teammates at the Assistant Secretary of Defense level, I've sat down with the DIUX leadership so that they're very well aware of what we're doing, so that we can partner where it makes sense, where we can leverage off of each other. And really, DIUX value to the Office of Naval Research is being able to reach out to what we call non-traditional performers, people and organizations that can do the work that we need. The prioritization of who gets tapped to do what, we have conversations. The Office of Secretary of Defense sits down with the S&T chiefs on a monthly basis, and we talk about what we're doing. We methodically and prudently identify areas that we can reduce duplication so that we can get the best bang for the buck. So it's not necessarily that the SCO and DIUX is popping up in a need that there's not already innovation, but it's really an enabler and an understanding of where we can do better collectively together. And I see value in the SCO and I see value in DIUX.
Yeah, and I wonder if organizations like that almost have a different mission from yours, because the way I kind of see them is they're reaching out to commercial industry for the most part to bring in technology that has been created already, whereas my sense is your focus really is on solving problems that are not solvable given today's science.
That's exactly right. In fact, when our CNO or commandant or fleet commander brings a tough problem, throws it on the table, if the S&T command has to start cold iron or a blank piece of paper, we've failed. And over these last 70 years, we've been able to have some level of solution space already in work to be able to move forward. And the S&T community truly is an enabling command that occasionally, or not more than occasionally, we have successes where we can deliver directly to the fleet. But for the most part, we're bringing those new technologies that have been demonstrated and experimented with. So organizations like SCO, organizations like our rapid prototype prototyping and experimentation and development teams can then take that and take their resources, which are focused on those prototyping and delivery, be able to do those things faster.
One thing we haven't talked about in detail yet is DoD's third offset strategy. And I wonder, since that has kind of been rolled out and articulated by the Deputy Secretary, to what extent it's kind of changed your focus, if at all, or whether the stuff that you already had teed up played nicely into what they're thinking in OSD.
Jared, actually a combination of both. One, the Department of Navy is 100% supportive of the Secretary's third offset strategy. The Department of Navy's S&T strategy specifically is a perfect foundational element that supports that third offset strategy in our priorities, in our focus areas, and the ongoing applied and advanced research that's underway. So it really helps, supercharge the third offset's probability of success to move forward. I also believe, as the Chief of Naval Research, part of that is not technology-based, but again, bringing together the best and brightest performers under the framework of the third offset, and understanding where we can all pull together based upon what we already have invested and where new investments make sense. We see that the Secretary of Defense and through the Deputy Secretary of Defense, bringing in our international partners to be performers and partners in that third offset strategy. And so the Department of Navy is fully endorses and is fully engaged in that third offset strategy.
We started off talking about the last 70 years of ONR, and I want to end in a similar vein. Zoom way in on your last 2 years as the Chief of Naval Research. What are you most proud of? What do you think have been the most consequential achievements during your tenure there?
So this will be surprising because, one, I've been asked this question before, and I think there's a perception that I will talk about a technology, a brand new capability, and what I'm going to say is the thing I'm most proud of and our biggest accomplishment is the continued awareness, promotion, development, supporting of arguably the best and brightest scientists in the world that call the Office of Naval Research and the Naval Research Laboratory home. Jared, I am impressed every day, and I learn something new every day with the intellectual capital and the ability for these scientists to truly discover and invent things that are nowhere in anybody's sight picture that truly will be revolutionary in the way we operate, not only the sailors and Marines, but for our commercial and for our quality of life. That's been the most proud element over the last 2 years. And I continue to champion those scientists and their impact around the world. It's been phenomenal. A close second right behind that are the partnerships that we've brought with industry and academia and our global partners for better awareness of the science and technology and the collaboration that we so desperately need to continue to pursue so that in these areas of intelligent systems and directed energy and cyber and autonomous systems, we truly can get what we call above the theoretical curve of technology development and push. And I am so proud to have been the steward over these last 2 years, and I look forward to watching the continued successes of the Office of Naval Research as I move into my next command.
Rear Admiral Matt Winter, the departing Chief of Naval Research, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. Find the complete interview online at federalnewsradio.com. Go to Agency of the Month. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Agency of the Month, Navy, sponsored by HP Enterprise on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.